Oh, I tells you. What a, God, it's been a long 37 years. Oh, boy. Welcome to PCMC. Let me say, for everyone who listens to Halloween 2020, all four parts of it, thank you so much. It was a lot of fucking work. Halloween is my favorite time of year, so we do specials all month, but it's a heck load of work. But Halloween's over, and now we look forward to the holidays and a new year, and hopefully big changes in the world for the better, for the betterment of the world.
Oh my God, please.
I hope you fucking voted.
I hope you did the thing.
I really do. So this is PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by a special guest, Ms. Kate Gainey.
Hello, hello.
Ms.
Ms. Yeah, a man owns me.
Ms. Mrs.
A what man about, owns
like,
me.
What about like on like invites where it says like the man's name? Like Mr. and Mrs. man's name?
Yeah, I've gotten mail to Mrs. Caitlin Gainey. Mrs. Michael Gainey, rather.
Isn't that crazy?
Like, yeah.
What century?
Right? It's bizarre. I kind of wish we did the hybrid last name thing, or that we just made up a last name. We could have been Rockefellers. You could write anything on that paper.
You can make up any fucking shit.
You could be anything you want, and we chose to keep the same name.
Silly. Lame. Silly Lame. Stuff. The problem with the hyphen is, you know, what do your kids do? Eventually, you'll have like 900 names.
Right.
That's why you're just going to start making up new shit. What do names mean, really?
Right.
It's not like people like you and I are passing down fortunes.
No. There is like nothing inherited with this name except some trauma, maybe some addictive tendencies.
Yeah. So Kate's here because me and Kate have a new podcast. So the new podcast is available anywhere podcasts are found, and it's called Cuckoo Bananas, starring me and Mrs. Kate Gainey. Kate, what's the podcast about?
What isn't the podcast about? Let me silence this phone here.
Oh, true.
Sorry. So, you know, life's rough. Life's real rough.
Yep.
And it's hard to be honest about how rough life can be and about how we sometimes handle that. And that's what the podcast is about. It's about being honest with ourselves and honest about who we are and the things we've done and the things we intend to do ongoing.
Yes. It is
tackling all the shit.
It is about all the shit. It is. But, you know, I think it would be a mischaracterization to say that it's a downer. It's actually a lot of fun, a lot of funny. I like to think of it as like, you know, when you had a shitty day and you go and hang out with your funny friend and you guys just make fun of life and how fucking stupid everything is and how fucking miserable you are.
Yeah, it's how I want a therapy session to be.
Yeah, just a lot more bits.
My therapist doesn't think I'm as funny, though.
My therapist rarely does bits.
Yeah, no, they usually don't take the bait.
Yeah, sometimes I try to do a bit and they shut it down.
Shut it down real quick.
Like, what is this bit you're doing?
Why are what you are you protecting yourself from here?
And I bring out like a fucking, I wear a tie just so I can squeeze it and hold it. Yeesh, rough room. Yeesh. So yeah, Cuckoo Bananas, and the name comes from it is not meant to be mocking, but it is a fun way to talk about having mental health issues, which both it's me and Kate
reclaiming
have.
Reclaiming the term.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right. You know,
I call me crazy first.
Exactly. I would love it if you could go to a doctor and you answer a questionnaire and they're like, well, listen, we've done some tests. And I'm going to say that you're cuckoo bananas.
The numbers are in.
Yeah.
And you're cuckoo bananas.
You're cuckoo bananas. The new DSM just came out and I looked at it. I'd say you're a mild narcissist, but a full-blown cuckoo banana. We talk about topics such as medicine, therapy, shame, money, sex and love, all the nitty gritty.
All manners of things.
Yes. Yeah, you can go get that anywhere. We're everywhere. Spotify, Stitcher, you know, every place where you get this. If you listen to the show and you like my voice and you'd like to hear me talk about something more personal than just my feelings on Halloween Town, then go on over to Cuckoo Bananas. The sort of unofficial mascot of Cuckoo Bananas that sort of naturally happened in the episode.
So naturally. It really was effortless and beautiful.
Just in the first episode it happened is Uncle Iroh from Avatar: The Last Airbender. Being that this is a PCMC episode, we got to bring it into some cartoon nonsense. So we're going to talk a little bit about Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra.
Yes. Which I only watched, I mean, both of them I only watched full through recently. I didn't watch them as a kid. I think when Avatar first came out, when The Last Airbender first came out, I think I was kind of at the age. Yeah, I think I thought I was too cool for it.
Yeah,
I thought I was too cool for it. It was like anime style, and I was way more concerned with being popular and stuff than actually like ingesting good media and like learning life lessons from a sage old man.
I guess I was like 18, and I probably was like, I'm 18. I could buy cigarettes now. I'm not going to watch a cartoon on Nickelodeon. I'm cool. I'm out there way crushing too cool for puss. That. I wasn't. I wasn't, but that's what I thought I should say that I was doing.
Right, but that is what you believed yourself to.
Right. It was before. Right. That's the funny thing about coolness, right? Which is it's this reverse thing where it's like the only way to be cool is to not care about it. If you for it's an true. Instant think about being cool, that's not cool at all.
No, and all I ever thought about was being cool. I actually had a moment recently where I was sitting around with my husband and some friends, and we were playing Magic the Gathering. And that's another thing that I just started doing. And, like, I just kind of smiled to myself because I was like, this is what you wanted to do when you were 12. You didn't want to, you know, do all that other shit, but you did it because somebody told you that's what you were supposed to care about. But really, you just care about fucking good TV shows and playing silly games and wizards, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think about like the kids that we made fun of. Like there was a kid in my grade, this is like freshman year of high school, who at lunch he would draw like Star Trek ships, but they were like his own ships. He like designed his own ships in the world of Star Trek. So of course we made fun of him. And now I look back and I'm like, that kid was fucking cooler than all of us.
Right? That was the coolest kid in my class.
He was like, I know a thing. I fucking know what I like. Just knowing what you like and being able to say it, to be like, I like Star Trek. What's the problem?
Right. I like this. Nobody else told me to like this. I decided on my own to like this and to pursue my interests.
Yeah. So
it's a nice thing.
Yeah. I have a friend who loves Avatar The Last Airbender, and I've talked to many people over the years that love it. While I taught film classes and media classes, I have read papers that students have written on Avatar, having not really known what it was about. And anyway, a close friend of mine has been talking it up for years, and she actually gave me the box set of all the DVDs. And I kind of sat on it, and I didn't get around to watching it for like 6 months. And so I finally watched it. And then like a week after I finished the DVDs, it got put on Netflix.
Of course.
And I think that's when a lot of the world found it.
Yeah, it definitely blew up when it hit Netflix. I similarly got the DVD set shortly before it hit Netflix. My husband was always a fan, and I saw it in the store. And he'd been telling me for the longest time, as well as like tons of other people, how much I would love this show, you need to watch it. So I saw the DVDs, I bought them, and I came home like all excited, ready to binge this show. And I sat down with my daughter and I put them on, and she was completely entranced for like three episodes. And then I looked over to her and I said, oh, so you like it? And she was like, no, can we watch something else?
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's now completely into it. She wanted to be Katara for Halloween, the whole thing. She's obsessed. She is obsessed now. But we bought the DVD set, and I had every intention of watching it. And we watched, you know, a handful of episodes. And then once it hit Netflix, I just watched it on my own.
Yeah.
The first time through. And then immediately started it over, and my husband watched it with me. And then immediately started over, and my daughter wanted to watch it this time through. So we watched it, I would say, like, early on in quarantine. We watched it probably, like, 6 or 7 times full through.
Wow. Yeah. So you're well-versed in it.
I mean, I think so. You know, I think so. I think I've absorbed a lot of it.
I only watched Avatar once all the way through, again, towards the beginning of quarantine. And it did feel like, I mean, everyone else was talking about Tiger King. And I did watch Tiger King, but it didn't rock my world. But to me, like,
no.
Avatar was like, I think when I think back on the COVID lockdown, I'm going to think about Avatar, Animal Crossing, and Doom Eternal. I feel like that was that's what it was all about.
Yeah. Those were the three big ones.
Yeah. So Avatar has 3 seasons with pretty strong arcs. For cartoons, especially made in 2005, they made the decision that you have to watch it in order and you have to pay attention. And you can't put them in all sorts of weird orders. It's not that kind of show.
No, it's definitely a linear plot. And it's really important because the whole story and the whole overall meaning is about the journey. And, you know, while time, as far as we know it, at least is linear, you know, you're always coming back to deeper truths. So I think that that's something that I found with the series, is that you're watching this journey over and over again, you know, and you're watching it and it unfolds linearly. But every time I watch it back, I'm learning something else. I'm realizing something else about it. I have made a different connection between that material and what's happening now in the world. And, you know, it's, yeah, I think every time I watch it back, I take something else from it.
Okay. Can you give us a little bit of a summary of the show for people who have never seen it? And I should say, spoiler alert for Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah. So the story centers around Aang, who is the Avatar, and he has been frozen for 100 years. And our story starts with a brother and sister who don't have their parents. Their mother is dead. Their father is off at war. And they set forth on a journey where they discover the Avatar frozen in ice. And so their journeys become tied, and they become the people who help him through learning to master the elements. The Avatar is meant to master each of the elements and be the one who can unite the 4 nations which are based in these elements.
Right. It takes place in a sort of mystical fantasy world that is very influenced by Asian cultures and Eastern religions, but is not in any real way a direct analog to any of those things. It's just sort of influenced by that stuff. It's its own sort of, it's its own world. And in this world, there are the 4 elements. And then there are some people called benders. An airbender is somebody who can use air. How do you put it? They use the term bend a lot in the show, but it's basically like, You
can control that element. Right. And you can channel it in a way that can be combative or defensive, but you can channel the element and physically manipulate it.
Right. Then there's firebenders, earthbenders, and waterbenders. And they all have different cultures. The airbenders were sort of like monks, and they were nomadic. When we begin the show, Avatar, The Last Airbender, Aang, our protagonist, is the last of his kind, so he believes. At that point, he's the last of his kind. All the other, he was accidentally frozen, and all of his other, the other people are dead, which is a, this is a theme that shows up again and again and again in science fiction fantasy, from Luke being the last Jedi to Doctor Who being the last whatever, you know, that it's something, you know, that repeats over and over and over again. Superman being the last Kryptonian, the idea of like, you are the last of your kind. And the waterbenders are very much like Inuits. The two other main characters, the brother and sister, Katara and Sokka, are from a water tribe. Sokka is not a bender. Katara is a bender. She can bend water.
He's believed to be the last of the southern water tribe. There's a southern and northern.
Right, right, right.
And she's believed to be the last of the southern waterbenders.
And earthbender culture, I don't remember. I guess they have, they like, they're metropolitan, right? They live in a city. They're kind of isolated.
So I've read a little bit about this, and there is actually a culture that the earthbenders and even the, like, the swamp, the people who live in the swamp in the series and stuff, that they're based on. Because it's funny, because there's a lot of cultural discourse surrounding Avatar and, you know, appropriation, and the fact that a lot of these characters are meant to be native and they're voiced by white actors and actresses. You know, there's the issue with the eventual film adaptation, which is a shit show, but a large issue about that was that, you know, it was all white actors and actresses.
But the creators of the show have almost nothing to do with that movie.
No, no, not at all. They do not claim that atrocity. But I've seen the joke running that, like, you know, oh, there are white people in the Avatar universe. Just look at the swamp people. And it's, you know, it's funny, whatever, you can giggle at it, but it's actually, they are based on, I can't remember the name of the people, the indigenous people, but they're people who eventually came to New Orleans. And, you know, that's kind of where that, like, quote unquote swamp culture shows up.
Right.
And then, but, I guess, you know, the firebenders, I think, are kind of like Japanese guys. Imperialists. Like, you know, they're,
it's a little deeper. They don't, you know, it's almost, I guess it's a little bit like Slytherin, where it's just like all the bad guys are firebenders, but to just to live in the Fire Nation.
All the bad guys are firebenders, but not all the firebenders are bad guys.
Exactly. People that live in the Fire Nation are not all bad. And then as we go on to Korra, you know, there are villains that are of totally different nations. The last big bad in that series is an earthbender, right? So it's a very rich world, and it's a really dense fantasy. And what I like about it is you can tell that the creators really worked it out. I mean, there are layers that you keep getting. You keep getting more of the world as both shows continue on. And for me, there was never a point where I was like, too much. I know some people feel that way about The Legend of Korra. In The Legend of Korra, there's a two-part episode, which is absolutely stunning, which gives this sort of like ancient history of how all the tribes started and how the first Avatar came to be. And some people don't like that. Although I think you could also take that episode as like an allegory. I don't know if they're necessarily saying that everything that happens in that episode is meant to be exactly what really happened, because it's illustrated in this like storybook kind of way. It's absolutely gorgeous. But some people don't like that episode. But for me, I was full on board. I love that episode, both those episodes.
I agree. So, I think it's one of my favorite parts of either series. I think it's incredible. And I think it is important. And I think that Korra didn't resonate with a lot of people at first because they were hoping for more of The Last Airbender, and it's very different. It's a totally different world. It's a different show. She is a completely different kind of avatar. It's just, it's different. And I think the intention was for the show to mature with the audience.
Right.
And I think maybe some people just wanted more of the same.
Right.
I think now that Korra is on Netflix, it's getting a lot more love than it did when it was first released, for sure. Right. And I think it's relevant now. So I think a lot of people of our age group are watching it and applying, you know, the lens of our current affairs.
Right, exactly. And,
you know, it's resonating a little bit more deeply than when, say, you know, somebody first viewing it was 16 or something.
Right, exactly, exactly. I don't know if we've said it yet, but the Avatar is a person who, much like the Dalai Lama in the real world, they are born to, they're sort of a reincarnation of the last Avatar, and they can master all four elements. So even though Aang, the protagonist of the original show, is an airbender, he can firebend, earthbend, and waterbend with training. And it's, yes, it makes you a cool science fiction badass, but it's not, you're not meant to just be like the greatest guy. You're meant to be defensive. You know, there's a lot of like that, you know, Jedi kind of stuff in it. Like,
you're meant to unify. Peace. Yeah, right,
exactly.
It's also, we saw Frozen 2 around the same time we were watching Avatar. And at one point, my husband and I were like, oh, so Elsa is the Avatar. It's a common story. It's a story that you see a lot, but it doesn't make it any less powerful of a story. And all the ways that it's retold are really incredible. And this is a really great telling of that story. You know, I don't know if we've emphasized, but these are kids that we watch go through this journey. Aang is 10 years old at the beginning of the story. You know, Katara, I think, is meant to be like 12, and Katara 14 and Sokka 12, rather. They're kids. They're kids. Right. And they're
in that first series, they are. In the second series, they're more adults, which is another reason why it's different.
Right, in the second series, you meet the Avatar, and she's already like 18 years old or 19 years old.
Right, right.
So it's a different kind of story. But watching kids deal with it, it also, you know, it's because there's also the innocence and purity of childhood in there somewhere. So Aang is like this doe-eyed protagonist who just sees the best in everything, who doesn't want to use violence. That's, you know, that's an error trait as well. They're very nonviolent people.
Right.
You know, they're vegetarian. They're nonviolent.
They have a big sense of humor. They're very lighthearted. Yeah. They meditate a lot.
They're monks.
They're monks.
Yeah, they travel, you know, they commune with the spirit world, and, you know, they're very related with everything to do with the air element, you know, all the unseen. But watching a child's character with that kind of inclination and that kind of awareness of spirit and things like that navigate this like really tumultuous landscape, this crazy world where, you know, all his people are dead. You know, the life that he knew before he was frozen is completely gone, and he's being thrust into this, and he's 10 years old.
And
so it's really cool.
And he's also, I think, a great character because he is funny, and he's like an actual little boy. Like, you know, the movie made by M. Night Shyamalan makes him stoic and all of the easy, stupid, cliche things that the show didn't do.
Right.
And he's completely humorless. But in the show, he's a little boy. Like, in the very beginning, one of the things that airbenders can do is they can sort of craft a ball of air underneath them and sort of ride on it like a little, like, you know, motorbike or something. And Aang does that a lot. And in the opening of every episode, he does that and like accidentally like drives into a wall and hits him and hurts himself like an idiot. And it just like,
'cause he's a child. Yeah.
Right. But in the beginning of every episode, Katara says, "But I think Aang can save the world."
Yep.
Gives me chills.
I believe Aang can save the world. And that's Mae Whitman.
Mae Whitman.
I just adore through and through.
Yes.
I adore me some Mae Whitman.
She's fantastic. Yeah.
And Katara is a great character. I mean, she comes under scrutiny for, you know, she kind of becomes the matriarch of the group. So, you know, she sometimes has to be a little bit of a Debbie Downer and bring them back to reality, or, you know, tell them to be responsible or whatever. She lost her mother in a traumatic way, so she speaks about that a lot. And I see a lot of, like, jokes on the internet about, like, oh, Katara bringing up her mother. And that's always a really interesting thing to me because I don't, you know, I've rewatched the show a million times, and Katara never brings up her loss just at random. It's always like in response to somebody in order to relate to them and show them, like, I've experienced great loss too. You know, she speaks about it with Aang when he speaks about losing his people.
Yeah.
You know, the only time that it's not really rooted in that is when she speaks to Zuko about it. And that there it's more rooted in anger and look at what you did, you know, as the prince of the Fire Nation. Look at what your people have done. You tore apart my family.
Yeah, that's a great segue because we should talk about Prince Zuko and his uncle Iroh.
My favorite characters.
A lot of people
say this go through. Yeah.
One of the best redemption arcs ever. I think I've said it before, maybe on Cuckoo Bananas or somewhere. Kylo Ren from the sequel trilogy, everything that gets wrong is what Zuko gets right. Like, Zuko is the perfect example of, he is a bad guy in the beginning because he feels like he's following a lineage of being the bad guy, and he's got all these things he has to do. But whereas in The Rise of Skywalker, like, halfway through it, he just all of a sudden is a good guy, and it feels really unfucking earned. Zuko is constantly taking little steps to the final season where he's on the good guy's side.
Yeah.
And it's painful thing for him.
Yeah, he gets violently ill as the evil leaves him. You know, there is so much to his story, and you actually see him, you know, dealing with the fact that he's not made all the right choices. Yeah. And he, you know, he owns what he's done and who he's been, which is huge. He doesn't try to pretend that he's not, you know, who he is. And he tries to fix the things that he and those before him have gotten wrong.
And I think this is why you and I like him as a character, because this is a theme that comes up in Cuckoo Bananas when talking about our own past and our own lives, and probably everyone's past and lives. I mean, if you think that you have not made mistakes or hurt people in your past, then you are completely blind, because of course you have. Of course
you're
you have.
You're in denial.
Zuko's father is the Fire Lord, and he's the main big bad, and he is basically an imperialist.
He's just trash.
He wants to control the whole world. Right. He's the bad guy. He wants to control the entire world. He wants the Fire Nation to be the strongest nation and just colonize all of the world. And because of a disagreement, Prince Zuko is cast out. So in the beginning, he's a prince and he's part of the Fire Nation, but he can't show face in the Fire Nation. His father doesn't want to see him. So he is trying to save his honor and be welcomed back into his family, into his father's good graces, by capturing the Avatar. Because the Fire Lord knows, because it's the whole, you know, mystic, you know, it's the, how do you put it, the prophecy. Like, the Fire Lord knows, like, the person that's standing in his way is the Avatar. The Avatar is meant to keep balance, and the Fire Lord doesn't want balance. He wants complete power.
I think part of his so his father tells him, you know, you can come back when you capture the Avatar. And I think part of it is like a sarcastic, like, yeah, you can come back when you capture the Avatar.
Right.
Because at that point, nobody's seen the Avatar in 100 years.
Right, right.
So he's like, all right, find the Avatar, and then you can come back to me. Like, I don't think he ever really wanted to give Zuko a fighting chance or to see him return. He never wanted to give him his love.
Right.
And the reason he's originally cast out is because he disagrees with the Fire Lord on some sort of violent method. I don't remember exactly what the context is, but Zuko, it doesn't sit with him right. And he speaks up. And, you know, I think that's important because it shows that even as a child, Zuko knew that, you know, he didn't feel like this was his path. He didn't feel right, and he ends up aligning himself with Uncle Iroh, which is a much more fitting father figure for him to facilitate his journey, because his journey is drastically different than his father expects it to be, or than his sister's is.
Right. Let's talk about Uncle Iroh.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Iroh.
Man, he the myth, the legend.
The brother of the Fire Lord, but when Zuko is cast out, he voluntarily goes with Zuko. He was this great general who has all this violence in his past and is respected in the Fire Nation because of that. Even though when we meet Uncle Iroh, he isn't the dragon. He isn't that thing that everyone thinks he is. He's become this sort of jolly, peaceful old man. And he's sort of like on Zuko's shoulder. Like, Zuko thinks that Uncle Iroh is helping him find the Avatar. And in a way, he is. But every little day, every little choice that Zuko makes, Uncle Iroh is slightly pushing him in the right direction. It's really a very interesting sort of arc. Although he doesn't have that much of an arc because he knows what he wants to do, I think, from the beginning. But we learn along the way what he wants to do. And I think that's why Uncle Iroh is such a great character. And I think that's why, like, I identify with Uncle Iroh, because he did bad shit in his past and now just wants to fucking chill.
Yeah. And now just wants to be like, hey, come have a cup of tea. Let's talk about it. Let's work through it. And that's that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad we get to see Spirit Iroh in Korra.
Yes.
That was a really, really welcome sight for me.
Yes. Yeah, in The Legend of Korra. How much later is The Legend of Korra?
You know, I do remember knowing this. But
Tenzin is like, what, 50?
I would say, yeah.
So maybe 70 years
mm-hmm.
after? So let's just say it's like 60, 70 years after Avatar The Last Airbender. And even though it's the same world, now it's much more advanced. Now it's kind of steampunky. Now there are automobiles, and there are engines, and there are trains, and there are more cities. They're really not, you know, the original show is very rural.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why the Legend of Korra has such a different flavor. Because right off the bat, from episode one, you're in a city.
Yeah, and it's a totally different world.
Right. And instead of the Avatar being this mystical thing that has been gone for 100 years and now is back, the Avatar is like, it's kind of like being in the royal family. Like, people know who the Avatar is. The Avatar lives a certain way. The Avatar makes public appearances. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. you're the Avatar. Like, people know she's the Avatar.
Right.
But she's very different from Aang. First of all, she's a female. Secondly, Aang, I think he took on the mantle of Avatar, I think, begrudgingly, where she really likes being the Avatar, even as a child.
Yeah, I love how we meet Korra. I love her spunk, and I think, I think people who were looking for more of Avatar, more of Aang, were like, oh, because she couldn't be any more different. And, you know, I think, with Aang being born an airbender, the element he struggled a lot with ended up being earth. That was one that he had a hard time with, and he ended up struggling with fire a lot. Water came a little bit more easily. Those elements are a little bit closer to one another. But he really struggled with fire and with earth. And with Korra, she really struggles with air. She's very grounded in her physical self, and, you know, she's not as into the whole spirit element of things. So
she's like she's like a professional athlete.
Yeah, yeah. And I think watching, you know, you watch Aang's journey, and it's kind of about him learning to be human on some levels, a little bit more, where Korra's is about learning how to be that spiritual bridge, or that spiritual icon, or you know, role model. She's got the physical thing down.
Right. She in the very beginning when we meet her, it's almost like she thinks of herself as like a superhero, and she has to learn all the other stuff. And her main mentor is Tenzin, who is the son of Aang. But Tenzin is like in his 50s, he's an older man, because this is so much further beyond. And Aang is like, you know, he's long dead, but there's a giant statue of him in the major city. He sort of hangs over the culture and over Korra's head. sometimes she feels like she's not going to be anything like him, which she isn't.
Right, and that's okay. And there's been, you know, a long string of avatars before her, and they were all different too. And I think that that's, you know, part of why they show the backstory, that two-part episode that we were talking about earlier. I think that's part of why they show it, because it shows that the original avatar was different from Aang or Korra. And, you know, you see some flashbacks of different avatars. You don't really get to know the full line, but every single one was different. And they're all, you know, the avatar is born to a different tribe with every incarnation. It repeats in a cycle.
Right.
So, you know, that dominant element and the nurture of the avatar is going to change how they do their job.
It actually reminds me a lot of Doctor Who, in that it's a reincarnation, yet the body is different and the temperament and the personality can be wildly different. Mm-hmm. Like every Doctor Who is still Doctor Who, but, you know, the current Doctor Who is a woman, and the last Doctor Who was an old man who was kind of grumpy, and the Doctor Who before him was a young man who was kind of goofy, but it's all still the same character.
Right. It's just coming through a different channel.
Why do you... This kind of gets into the whole Joseph Campbell hero with a thousand faces thing, but why do you think... why do you think we're drawn to characters like this? You know, like, I've thought about this a lot. I started thinking about this very deeply after The Last Jedi came out, because so many people hated that movie, and one of the reasons people hated it is they felt like they didn't like what happened to Luke Skywalker's character. And I read a really interesting article that was like, it compared The Last Jedi to the movie The Last Temptation of Christ, which people also lost their shit over, because it made Christ look like a human who had human desires and wasn't
right,
and was fallible and not completely divine. And the writer of the article, which I wish I could remember who they were, but you can easily Google it and find it, basically was saying, like, in our modern culture, Luke Skywalker is Jesus. And that's why people freaked out, because if you've in The Last Jedi, he's not, like, wise, gentle, like what you thought he was going to be. He's sort of crabby and dejected and sad and scared. And that's what really pissed people off. So I guess I've been thinking since then about this idea of, like, what is, even like Harry Potter, like, why is that character so interesting to people?
I feel like it's the idea. I mean, I think part of it is just wanting to think you're better than people or something, and wishing you were special, all powerful in some way, or special, right? I think it's also about the idea that these characters have control over their environment or over their story and how it unfolds because of their, like, mystical ability or their, you know, awareness or whatever. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's also, in a way, because they have, these characters have a marriage of spirit and self. That's something that most people in day-to-day life, I don't think, either attain or, you know, broadcast about themselves or, you know, but it's like this marriage of, like, this unseen power, that godlike, if you will, and a human channel for that. Right. So it's like being a channel for something bigger than yourself. And I think that appeals to people too, whether or not you're conscious of it. I think that does appeal to people.
Right. And all of these characters deal with feeling like they have to live up to something. Like Harry Potter, he knows that somehow as a baby he killed Voldemort, and he knows that everyone knows that, but he doesn't know how he did it or if he can do it again. And he knows that people call him the Chosen One, but he's just a kid and he doesn't understand what that means. In some ways, it's, even though it's like these characters are special and they're one of a kind, it still relates to the general everybody, because we all, in the act of aging and becoming adults, have to take up some mantle. You know, like, just think about when you're a little kid and you see a grown-up and you're like, boy, how can I be a grown-up? How could me right now ever one day be a grown-up?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why stories like this resonate so much with us. Because it is about responsibility, right? You know, when you're a little kid, you can't fathom the idea of having a job and having to support yourself and having to support maybe people you love. and having to make hard decisions and stuff. And that's really what all those characters have to do, whether they're Luke Skywalker or Doctor Who or Aang or any of these people. Like, you have to make tough decisions that you don't think you're able to, you can't even fathom when you're a kid.
And it makes you wonder, just thinking about how you were saying, you know, hearing your whole life that you're the chosen one and all of that. I think that also probably appeals to us too on some level psychologically, like having people who believe in you. Like looking at these characters and seeing like, well, people really believe in this person. Like people are putting their faith in this individual. And like, I think that that is scary, but it's as someone watching a character navigate that, it's empowering. Maybe in your own life, if that confronts you, it's a little bit scarier, but watching a character navigate that, you're like, oh man, look at this little kid. Look at this kid doing this. Like,
And yeah. Well, let me ask you, between both avatars that are the protagonists of these series, Aang and Korra, which character do you like the most? And you can take the term like in any vague way that you wanna read that.
Yeah, I think between the avatars, I like Aang better. Just because I tend to like the philosophy and the line of thinking of Airbenders. And I like that influence in an avatar. So, you know, I think I would, in general, I would probably like the airborne avatar over others, possibly, just because I really value that kind of thinking, and I find it interesting, and I think it's a good example.
Yeah, I identify as an air nomad because I'm a vegetarian. I have a sense of humor. I have tattoos, and I believe in tattoos as a way of expressing myself. And I shave my head. And right there, that's the four things.
Air nomad, done.
Clearly, that's what I am.
Clearly. I don't know what tribe I really identify with. It varies.
Well, on Cuckoo Bananas, you said that you think you'd be an avatar.
Yeah, I think I
support that still.
Well, I don't say that with an inflated ego. I say that because I am, you know, in my actual life and in my practices in life, I'm a person who values the elements, and I value what each brings, and I understand them and what they represent, like in this deep way that I can't really explain. And, you know, I think I'm pretty balanced with a lot of that stuff, which is why I would think that, not because I think I'm powerful or that I'm able to unite people or anything, but because I have reverence for each of the elements and I feel capable of learning things to do with each of the elements and stuff. It's not that I feel like I'm gifted, but it's that I feel I'm open.
Okay. I get that. I feel that.
I mean, but honestly, I'm probably a firebender. I'm an American, and
that's a painfully true statement. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I own an iPhone.
Yeah.
That's some firebender shit.
Yeah. I don't see any airbenders with iPhones. If they have a phone, it's like...
They wouldn't even want a phone. They'd be like, why do you need a phone?
Yeah, no.
You'd be like, because you want to know what's going on. They'd be like, but what's going on? Nothing's going on.
What could possibly be going on?
Yeah, it's so true. One of the things we talk about a lot in Cuckoo Bananas is our own shit. And in different ways, you and I both have past trauma. And I wonder if that's why you and I are drawn to stories like this.
I do. I think part of being human is when we watch, listen to, read stories, we're looking for bits of ourselves. We're looking to recognize ourselves in those stories somewhere. We're looking to find hope for whatever we're facing. We're looking to find a message that applies to us. So I think, you know, the fact that these things resonate with people who seek to be self-aware and, you know, in balance and to look for deeper meanings in things. I think that there's certainly a connection there. I think we look for comfort and we look for, you know, reminders of ourselves.
Well, you know, that's one of the philosophies of this podcast, PCMC. You know, I firmly in my heart and soul believe that there is nothing frivolous about art and cartoons and pop culture, because it's just, it's us thinking about us.
Yep.
So to, if you want to call this podcast criticism, which in a certain way it is, it's, I'm just thinking about how we think about ourselves.
Right.
And I think I'm drawn to someone like Aang because he's funny. And I think that is so, I think that it's noble to be funny. I think it's noble to make jokes. You know, I've talked about this before on the show, but one of my best friends who was a comedian, and me and him performed comedy together for many years, and he passed away a few years ago at a very young age, in his early 30s. And I spoke at his funeral, and I said, you know, let's remember how funny he was. And he dealt with a lot of pain, but he still laughed, and he tried to make other people laugh. And that's what I always think about with him. And I think that's in some ways my philosophy too. You know, and maybe it's a philosophy of Cuckoo Bananas, why it's a show that we make stupid jokes. Because I think that there's, I think if you've been through bullshit and trauma and you've got things to generally be sad about, but you decide to fucking make a joke, I think that's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the only way I'd be able to get through any of this shit. Like, if I didn't have a sense of humor, if I couldn't laugh at absurdity, if I couldn't laugh at myself, I mean, I would just feel incredible shame all the time. I, you know, you have to be able to look at yourself with humor. You have to, because if you keep yourself, you know, under this critical lens all the time and you don't share any sort of joy and all you focus on is your pain and not channeling it into something else, that's all you'll have. And who wants to be the person who's just miserable? Who wants to be defined by the worst thing they've done or the worst quality about themselves?
Right. You know, I think, you know, misery loves company, right? So miserable people tend to want to make other people around them miserable. So I think if you are someone who deals with depression or anxiety or whatever it is, and you make it, you put effort into actually channeling your pain into making other people laugh, I think that's the best thing. Because, you know, we all know miserable people that make other people miserable, that they are just a black hole of suck that you don't even want to be around because they just deflect their shit all over you.
Yep. And nobody, there is nobody who doesn't have shit. We all have shit and it has to be dealt with one way or the other. And if you don't deal with it, you will deflect it at other people. You just will. That's it's just going to happen. And why not? Why not instead?
Right.
Turn it into humor and make people around you laugh. And in that way, you know, making people laugh brings you joy. It brings them joy. And it's a way of healing. It's laughter is a way to heal.
It also has an ability to take the air out of the seriousness of it and kind of remind you of how, like, life is just short and silly and stupid.
Yeah.
Like, this whole thing's dumb.
Right. This whole thing means fucking nothing. So might as well laugh.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so the last thing I want to talk about before we say goodbye is you are a artist. You make things.
I do.
I'm familiar with your paintings, but you've got other stuff going on. Tell us.
So I am working on a series of body positive and just generally feel good watercolor designs based on different fruits and vegetables, plants, all the good shit.
The avocado is really great.
Thank you. I love my avocado. That's probably my favorite one.
Right. It's it's called what?
Good fat.
Good fat.
Good period, fat period.
Yeah.
Because you could be good, you could be fat, it's all okay.
Yes.
It's all right.
Awesome.
Hey.
And why fruits and vegetables?
Well, I think that they're fun to paint, first of all. Yes. But I think that there's a lot of interconnected things in the universe that if we can look at, you know, juicy fruit and think about how like beautiful it is, whatever, then like, why can't you apply that to a human? Or, you know, like I think there's so many different shapes and colors and textures that naturally occur in the world. And, you know, that doesn't just apply to plants. That's humans too. We're all different, and it's a beautiful thing. Everything has its own kind of beauty, and it's all important and it's all relevant. Everything is connected and relies on something else to grow and to thrive. And yes.
Beautiful. Yeah. So if you like this kind of hippy dippy mumbo jumbo bullshit,
if you like this wackadoo shit,
Kate is always spouting off kind of stuff on Cuckoo Bananas.
Yeah.
So this has been a good episode. We actually typically on PCMC, we're a little bit more exhaustive when we talk about a topic, but we didn't really spoil too much. I hope, hopefully we just sort of, you know, appetized you enough that you'll go and watch Avatar and Korra. And, you know, come back and tell us what you think of it.
Get some quality takeaways.
Absolutely. And if you want to hear more of me and Kate together, Cuckoo Bananas, available anywhere podcasts are found. We end every episode of PCMC by saying go bye-bye. Kate, will you say go bye-bye?
Go bye-bye.